And welcome.
Welcome into Gravel Talk, ladies and gents. Thank you for joining us.
Well, this week in the Spotlight and Squirt Circle, we are sitting down with
Greg Gagne, the son of Vern Gagne.
We're sitting down with Larry the Axe Henning.
We're sitting down in the Spotlight and Squirt Circle with Ryan Allen, Darren Corbin,
Zach Gowen.
We're sitting down with Dick Justice.
You're listening to Gravel Talk, keeping you up to date on the Midwestern independent wrestling.
And we are live! Woo!
And welcome into Grapple Talk, ladies and gents. Nick Ragnar, joined by Jesse Von Raspberry to my left.
Hey,
How's it going, man?
Hey, it's going all right. You know, like I'm growing to this new nickname. You know, I'm like, I sit there in the car now, and I'm driving down the road, and I'm like, Jesse Von Raspberry,
Raspberry. Yeah, you like it. Yeah. It's a new age of Grapple Talk because things are shaking up a little bit. As you probably noticed, I didn't introduce AC Riley, and he's nowhere to be found right
now. Well, it's an end of an era, Nick. You know, after what happened at WrestleMania with The Undertaker retiring, and we were going to get to that sometime in this show, it almost felt like we had to do something different. We had to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And like at this point in time, like, man, where we're going is uncharted territory for
us. Well, AC Riley, unfortunately, will no longer be joining us here during our recording of the episode, our discussion portion of the episode. Mm-hmm. But he'll still be on the road, and he'll still be contributing both in editing, and he's also going to be trying to get some interviews for us, too, while he's at shows and stuff. So he'll still have some sort of handle on the show, and he'll still be heavily involved. He just won't be sitting here bickering with me and you like he typically does and falling asleep and things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, definitely. It might be a little bit more lively hour to an hour and a half, you know, podcast these days. But, you know, like basically you have to give shout-outs and kudos to Alex because without him really doing a lot of the heavy lifting behind the scenes, I don't think we would be where we are today.
That's definitely right. But I think, you know, because AC Riley is mm-hmm. no longer going to be here with us, I think there's definitely a popular conception that's going to be happening. You know.
This is awesome!
We might have botched the... Blue Pants is on the end of that. We might have botched the playing of that. But something else that's kind of cool. We're introducing like sounds of the podcast, like live.
Yeah. We're trying something different now. We're kind of making it more feel like a radio show, like something you would hear on drive time radio, especially if you're coming in like Levitard show or something like that. Something with, you want to listen to it and you have fun listening to it.
Because that's
what wrestling is, Nick. It's fun.
Yeah, we have a lot of different format changes that I think we're going to try introducing over the next couple of weeks. Things you can possibly look forward to. Actually, I think we're going to have a new segment at the end of this show, so stick around for that. But there's a lot of other new things that we're going to be doing, as well as integrating this little soundboard that we have that I think is going to be really exciting. We might need to do some training on it behind the scenes. Basically, I came in the studio today, and you're like, check this out, dude. And I was like, all right, sweet.
Well,
let's try it.
Well, maybe we need to go to the Performance Center down in Orlando just like sit there and like rep after rep after rep, wearing sweatbands and stuff like that, like montaging it.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can get it.
We could definitely do that. But WrestleMania this past weekend, my first time ever being in Baba Louie's.
You've never been to Baba Louie's?
Never been to Baba Louie's. It was my first time being in De Pere. Basically, from what I understand, I'm kind of getting brought in for this short program here between AC Riley and WPW's owner, Ron.
I think it's Pop Rocky.
Whenever I was cutting promos, I'd always just make up his last name because I was afraid I couldn't pronounce it correctly.
Which is a very good thing for you to do as a heel because at that point in time, you're making yourself look like more of an asshole.
Yeah, I was kind of like, pulling influence from my, The Rock and Chris Jericho and saying the most ridiculous things, but also sounding like an idiot in doing so. But basically, yeah, they asked me to come in for this these couple of shows, and, first thing I heard was Baba Louie's, and I was like, man, they've been running there forever, and I've never been there. This is kind of exciting. Like, my first chance to get there, we had a regular road trip, me and AC Riley. He didn't sleep at all, which was kind of surprising.
Was he driving?
I was driving.
Wait. So you guys were driving, and he didn't fall asleep
once.
So what's the trick of making sure AC Riley doesn't fall asleep?
You know, I think it's just making frequent Quick Trip stops so he has the opportunity to continue buying energy drinks because I think he might have drank four of them in a six-hour span.
Four of them.
It was crazy. I'm pretty sure he might have drank four energy drinks. I think it was definitely at least three.
Now, every time we actually make a quick KT stop, it's always the Pepsi Max.
Yeah.
Always.
I think 20 ounces. It might have been three energy drinks and one Pepsi Max, I think.
That's a lot of fluids.
It's a lot of fluids, a lot of caffeine. I'm surprised he's not dead.
Like, does he get, like, the jitters?
He doesn't get the jitters, no. But, I mean, I think when we were getting to, like, Toma, that's always AC Riley's his fall asleep. That's like, it's like if he hasn't fallen asleep yet, once you hit Toma, it's like he's out for that last 40 minutes.
Oh,
but
man.
When we got there, yeah. He seemed like he might have been dozing a little bit, but dude stayed awake. I'll give him credit. I mean, maybe it was because I was the only one in the car. He does it with you sometimes.
Yeah, he does.
Know. Maybe you're just boring. I don't know.
I'm not boring. Listen. Most of the time, 9 times out of 10, so every road trip always starts out with like we very much like talk about the show, and it's always very self-centered on a lot of the stuff. But you know, that's all you're gonna do. And then there comes a point where he starts checking his social media. And, like, he's just scrolling. So you're not going to, like, bother him because he's, you know, it's kind of rude, you know.
Yep.
Be like, drive 2:10, 2:10. All of a sudden you look over and it's, like, you know, like a half hour later.
And he's just out.
Just out.
Gone.
So I don't know. I don't think I'm that bad of a road trip guy.
I think part of it, too, is that, you know, obviously being his manager, almost to a – I'd almost say we're so involved that we're almost tag team partners at this point just because of how much it seems like I get kicked in the face.
Well, depending on how the program shapes out, you guys might be tag team partners.
Well, we most likely will be. That's kind of what the match was made at the pier. But anyways, with RWA and RCCW and now WPW, you know, having a lot of creative control in RCCW and RWA as well, you know, we always are sitting there during the road trips going over all of that shit, like, constantly. Like, hey, what can we do for this? How can we make this work? In, like, 6 months, like, how can we make this work? So I think that's part of the reason why he's able to you know, stay awake during that time. But, yeah, but when we got there, you know, so interesting. Just a wrestling ring in the middle of a sand pit. Just so
it's
different.
It is definitely different. And we've done a few shows there. And every time we've done a show there, by the time you're done, there is a layer of dust on all of your equipment that is at least the size of a double stuff area.
Yeah.
It is huge.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
I wore my dress shoes to the show. I just was like, I'm just gonna rock the dress shoes today. I don't want to go too douchey. And basically, you know, when you're going around the ring and the match is going on, I'm so focused at what's happening and making sure, you know, we're still getting heat and whatever, that I forget that there's sand. But then all of a sudden, you know, we head back to lacrosse next day. I put my shoes on and they're just full of sand, and I was like,
man,
that's always the worst feeling. It's just terrible. But
that is terrible.
But you know, that it was fun. It was a good show. You know, decent turnout, I think, for the most part. I mean, like I said, it's my first time being to Baba Louie's. I know that that's been a staple in Wisconsin pro wrestling. But yeah, really, really fun trip, and very thankful that they had me. Really looking forward to the Stevens Point show though in a couple of weeks, because that's always a pretty big one.
Yeah, I actually talked to Ben McCoy, the promoter, Wisconsin pro wrestling, and he was very, very hyped for that Point show. It looked like on paper with everything that's been sold, like pre-sales, it's gonna be a packed house again, which is awesome, because that first Point show we did, standing room only, everyone was so hyped for that show. And it's good to see a community come out for wrestling like that.
Yeah, I will give Ben McCoy a ton of credit. I mean, this guy, you know, not only is he heavily involved in his own angles during the show, like, you know, like a normal worker, but he's also just so hands-on with the booking aspect of it. It's such a different show to be a part of because, you know, at least for me, I don't know necessarily if it's like this for a lot of other shows, but at least for WPW at Baba Louie's, he just had... You know, he wanted to make sure that everything went according to plan, storyline wise. Like, this point that needs to get across, you need to make sure you do this. Hey, you have this many seconds for your promo. Don't go over. You need to do this. Like, when he came up to me, typically in other promotions, it's like, hey, man, you know, you got a promo, just cut one.
Yep.
Ben was like, and I really like this. You know, I mean, it's fun having that creative control, but it's really nice also having a point that you need to make and knowing that that has to be a big part of what,
like,
it is
emphasis.
That you're saying. Right. So, like, he came up to me and he's like, hey, man, you need to cut the promo after the match and basically call it Ron and do this. And I was like, you know, I kind of like that because it made, you know, it reinforced, like, okay, so if I'm going to do this, it must be right because this is what this guy wants. And then, you know, with other matches and stuff, it's like, hey, man, you guys need to make sure you do this. I'd like to have the finish like this. And, you know, while some people might not like that kind of, you know, that kind of constraint, I think it's really helpful, and it books the show. Just it makes sure that from finish to end, you know, it's a nice flow, opposed to just being a bunch of different separated matches, because that's one thing I noticed with WPW, and I definitely have to give Ben McCoy credit for, because you're basically organizing 2.5 hours of entertainment, and that is tough.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. And giving people carte blanche, after a while, people get kind of lazy with the carte blanche.
So yes, good point.
Giving them a direction you need to go and a confines within that direction kind of really stretches your imagination, because you have to fit everything that you want into those confines. It's kind of like when you're in school and they give you an assignment to do, like, a 3-page paper.
Yep.
You know exactly how long that paper's got to be. It's the same thing when we were in school for, like, communication and stuff like that, and you had to come up with a 2-minute video. You might think, like, oh, man, this video is going to be great. It's at 5 minutes. And then you're like, no, this has got to be two. Yeah. So you start chiseling away at that fat, and all you're left with is the meat and the bones of that project.
Yep.
And it's a great thing. One of the ones I always remember very fondly was when we were at Squared One up at the watering hole there in Green Bay. He actually grabbed Ryan Brown by the hips while they were shooting a promo, and he moved Ryan Brown like a Steadicam because Brown was just standing there shooting, and he wanted him to move on this backstage segment. And I was just like, no one else would have done that.
Something as little as that can make a huge difference when it comes to a promo. You know, he basically came up to me, and the point of our post-match promo was basically to challenge Ron. You know, so what I did, and we can actually even take a look at it if you want because it's on YouTube, but basically what I did is I acted like I was super upset because AC Riley lost again, and I was there to make a difference. I ripped off my shirt. I was shirtless. My ugly body was all out for everybody to see.
No way.
I challenged Ron to a one-on-one match. Ron came in the ring, and AC Riley, you know, swept in to make the quote-unquote save, and, you know, Derek St. Holmes came for the save, challenged us to a tag match, and it happened. And basically, before we went out there, Ben came up to me and he goes, "Hey, man, you know, you just need to." In essence, he basically told me, "I just need to act super pissed, like I just need to be just on edge, like just totally just beside myself." And so that's exactly what I did. And that's, you know, when I had the mic in my hand, I was like, "Oh, this is definitely what I need to do," and it felt right. And you know, I'm definitely happy again that there's somebody there to be. This is what you need to get out of your promo, young man. And it's like, perfect, I'll do that. And, you know, it got over pretty decently. So
I did hear a story about your guys' match. It was a Fatal 4-Way match, and you had a rookie in there as well. I will prop up some of this audio right now. And you had a rookie in
That's
there.
Me.
And the rookie, first time ever, they told him, "Hey, can you do like a high spot? Hey, is a moonsault all right?"
Yeah, moonsault off the top rope to the outside of the ring. I was watching it from the opposite corner, and I literally was like, "Holy shit, that was beautiful!"
All right, here's you then.
Break his hip. Stereotypical old man threat.
The nicest thing about like AC Riley's character in ACW, not ACW, but WPW, pardon me, is the fact that he feels like he's a whiny, like entitled child, and it's really not that far of a stretch.
No, that's totally accurate, actually. It's basically him turned up to a 10.
Of course, here comes referee T.J. Madison and then Ron coming in the ring as well.
You know, I started taking the shirt off here, and I pulled the britches up a little bit. And somebody started chanting to keep my shirt on. Instantly, I heard that, and I was like, shirt's coming off.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Look at those hips, my friend.
Those are love handles, not hips.
Oh, come on, man. You really going to say that? And that's basically how it ends. Derek St. Holmes comes in for the save. But, yeah, but it was really nice because Ben gave me that direction to be that angry, pissed-off guy. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even know what I didn't go over any of that promo in the back. I was just like, I'm going to be mad as if Ron's actually screwing us over, and I'm just going to say what I would say if we got screwed over by this guy. And that's partially because Ben was like, dude, you need to be frantic. You need to be super pissed. And I was like, all right, I guess that's the promo I'll cut. And that's what's really nice about it, though. You know, it's like you don't have to sit there and be like, what's creative? You know, how can I get my point across? You have a guy sitting here telling you, hey, man, this is all that you need to get across.
Yeah.
It's like, sweet. So I was able to go out there. I focused on the match the entire time, and I was like, all right, let's act like I'm actually upset that AC Riley lost. Even though that rookie dude should have won, because what a sick moonsault that was, man.
That is really cool, especially for the fact that he's never done it before. That's what blew my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I've never done a moonsault before. I'm like, wow, that's insane. But you guys are on the road again this weekend. It's going to be a huge weekend. Everyone wants to go out and watch wrestling, especially after watching untold amount of hours of WWE programming over the last, like, 4 days. There's so much programming. We'll get to it at some point. But you guys are going to be in RWA in Waseca, right?
Yeah, we'll be in Waseca, RWA. AC Riley's taking on Jordy Lee in a singles matchup for the RWA Heavyweight Championship. Kind of playing hot potato over there a little bit as far as who the challengers are, because he took on Colin Brooks at the last show. Two guys that I don't believe either of them have ever wrestled for RWA. So should be interesting. Should be a lot of fun. I think, you know, if there's anybody that can get over in RWA without ever being there before, it's probably Jordy Lee. So really
that
excited,
is definitely true.
Really excited for that match. Yeah, it should be another good one. AC Riley, you know, holding that championship, and we'll see, I guess, if he can walk out as the champ when he takes on Jordy Lee. And you're going to be, you also got a show this
weekend. Yeah, I'm going to be in Evansville, Minnesota as well. It's a 4.5-hour drive from here. It's going to be a long drive, but I'm working with the AWF again, doing some
good
camera
guys.
Work with those guys. Always enjoy the company of working with, like, Ian and Calvin over there, and of course, like, Tony and all the guys in the backstage and everyone that's out there performing. They always put on a very good show, very friendly and, like, family-oriented.
Right.
And, like, they do some really good things for these communities, and they got a different philosophy than a lot of people do, because they do run TV, but they run towns where their TV gets.
Nice.
So it's very much they,
right,
once a year, they come back to that town, usually do very good business, and they always put on a good product. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Definitely. That should be a lot of fun. RWA is always great because it's only 2 hours of a drive. If you drive fast, hour and 50 minutes. So,
oh, that's not bad.
I always look forward to RWA. It almost feels like home shows, because, I mean, we're so used to that 3.5-hour drive that when you have a 2-hour drive, you're like, wow, that's really close. When, even though it's not. But
True.
But compared to your 4.5, it's pretty darn close.
That it is.
When you're not getting home at like 4 in the morning.
Oh, man, I might just stay overnight.
That's probably honestly
Be the best bet. Even though, like, they do get done rather early with their shows, usually they run like a very tight ship, so they'll be done by like 9. And you're like, wow. Look at that.
But you're still getting home at like 2 a.m. by yourself
on
the road. That's a dangerous.
Yeah, man. You know, some coffee in hand, some CDs blaring in the old jukebox.
You could always do what Ryan Brown used to do on our road trips. Me and him would ride together, just us two.
Roll down the window.
He'd roll down the window and just stick his head out. He looked like a freak.
Didn't he almost do that one time and still almost fell asleep and still almost drove you guys off the
road? Yeah, that was when we were, I think that was Amory. Like, I think we almost died like 6 times because we both couldn't stay awake. And countless times he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then it's like, just pull it, put his head out.
Hey,
just long ramen noodle curls blowing in the wind. Come back in. 10 minutes later, he's gone.
Yeah.
Because he told us that story once. I'm pretty sure he told us that story once. He's like, I fell asleep once, and I was like, you know, I drove for like an hour, and it's like, bullshit, Ryan Brown.
Yeah, then he actually did fall asleep for like an hour. And drove. Yeah, that's just always kind of crazy. But we got a really jam-packed show.
Yeah, we've been talking way too much as it is. I think we gotta probably take a quick break and come back and do some WWE talk, because how do you not talk about that this week?
It'd be very hard. Especially if this podcast is about anything else besides wrestling.
Yeah, but we have to talk about it. We got a lot of things we want to talk about post-Mania. We want to talk about post-NXT. We want to talk about the roster shakeup next week. You also did some research, some stats that we can pull out next. I think it's kind of exciting and something interesting to look at. But we'll talk about that next. So stick it here on Grapple Talk, folks.
Hey, this is the real Brock Hall. You want to get your reality check? Check out Grapple Talk.
Don't get it, check my truth and gun. Don't get it, check my This is Jordy Lee on Talk is Jericho. You're listening to Gravel Talk.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Chris Lockman, host of the Smart Money Wrestling Podcast. Join me and my co-host, AJ Jensen, each week as we discuss all things professional wrestling. WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, Lucha Underground, New Japan, as well as the local indie scene here in Wisconsin. We'll also bring you interviews with some of the Midwest up-and-coming independent stars and where you can see them in your area. You can find us on SoundCloud and iTunes, as well as on Twitter, at Smart Money. Check us out.
Hi, this is the Minnesota Madman, Doug Meyer, host of the wrestling podcast on the DVM Podcast Empire,
One Ball Radio.
We recap Raw, NXT, Ring of Honor, and other shows of the week. We interview wrestlers, go back in time with This Week in Wrestling History, and we go, hey, whatever happened to you? Check us out on iTunes or DVMPE.com.
Ryan Yanishadis here from the Ringside Report to remind you to watch the Ringside Report every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 p.m. on YouTube. Brandon McGrath and I discuss WWE, TNA, and the local independent scene. Go to youtube.com/RB Enterprises. That is the Ringside Report, your front row seat to all things wrestling.
Hey, this is Dave Dynasty from the Dave Dynasty Show. Hey, check out our weekly podcast where you get my take on wrestling headlines, I answer listener questions, and I interview your favorite independent wrestling stars. You can find us at www.davedynasty.com or look up The Dave Dynasty Show on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Thanks for your support.
Tune into the Indie Power Rankings reveal every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio, Filling the Void Radio Network. You can also subscribe to Filling the Void Radio Network on iTunes. Give a follow to the Indie Power Rankings on Twitter, at Indie Power Ranking, no GS, Instagram, at Indie Power Rankings, on Facebook, facebook.com/IndiePowerRankings. You can also go to the website where you can see the top 10 for the week, the tag team top 5, anything else independent wrestling related, IndiePowerRankingsIPR.wordpress.com.
Hey everybody, it's me, Darren Corbin. I've always gotten the question, why do I not do my own podcast? Well, I've branched out and I've tried to do Wrestling Reflections and the Wrestlers Reviewing Movie Letter, plus my promos that I flood your feed with all the time. And the number one reason is, when it comes to podcasts, everyone can always find a way to hear myself talk, and there's numerous podcasts out there, but I want to give my endorsement to one very special one. And that'd be Grapple Talk, that covers a lot of the Midwest independent wrestling highlights. See, a lot of the local Midwest wrestlers are the spotlight of the Squared Circle hosts. And that would be Nick Ragnar, Jesse Von Rudin, and AC Riley. And every week on iTunes or Podbean, you can catch their podcast. So I just want to give them a shout out. So if you're asking me why I don't do podcasts and you're maybe looking for my opinion, check them out for all your podcast needs and take a look and keep supporting independent wrestling in the Midwest.
You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Keeping you up.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Keeping you up.
Yes! 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 Yes!
Keeping you up to date on Midwestern independent wrestling.
So yeah, after this jam-packed weekend of wrestling, you know, Nick, we had to sit down here and we have to really dissect exactly what we want to talk about. And it's always interesting because we don't have all the time in the world on this.
We don't.
And like every podcast in the world has already done
takeover. Every podcast.
WrestleMania breakdown, Raw breakdown, SmackDown breakdown. So what we're going to do is kind of something a little bit different. We're going to do the takeaway from TakeOver.
Yeah.
And basically just a general synopsis of exactly what we thought of TakeOver.
I think the idea behind what we're going to try to do here, and now we're just going to be explaining this longer than we're going to be talking about
probably.
It, but the general idea of what we're going to talk about here in the next 20 to 30 minutes, who knows, maybe 6 hours. I don't know. We could talk about this stuff for days.
We're going to be growing facial hair.
Is personally, I think I value mine and yours opinion. So, I mean, even though we're a couple of days behind schedule, I think even though I'm just going to say it. We're just going to talk about WWE this week, and then hopefully people enjoy it just because simply we're offering opinions that they might have not heard yet. So
yeah, definitely. When you look at TakeOver on paper, it looked like a really solid show, and it ended up being a very solid show. But it was a show with low expectations, I think, really. Because you didn't really feel the buzz for it as you did, like, TakeOver last year in Dallas.
That's
or TakeOver in Brooklyn.
That's the thing, though, is I feel like lately it's always been like that. It's been like every takeover we've had over the past, even going back to last year's WrestleMania, was, man, this just doesn't have the same buzz as a typical takeover. And then all of a sudden, it's just like at the, you know, a minute after that show wraps, it's like, holy shit, that was a really good show. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that always happens, and I'm not sure if we go back and maybe there was one takeover that just blew, you know, maybe the first Brooklyn takeover or something that blew everybody away so much that nothing, you know, it's almost like getting high off heroin.
Yeah.
It's like you're always chasing that high, but you never get there.
But chasing the takeover. Like,
yeah, I'm not sure if that's part of it, you know, just because, you know, I think we've been saying this constantly that, you know, all the hype, the build isn't living up to expectations, and then the show's over and we're like, damn, that was a really good show.
But is it so much like the hype is not living up to the expectations, or is the TV leading up to it? Because we know they're going to get to that point with TakeOver that we're kind of, I don't know, it doesn't seem like there's enough variety, even though it's probably still the best TV that WWE does.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's part of it. You know, I know that I actually said, I don't watch NXT weekly anymore. It used to be can't miss for me.
Yep.
And I think part of that was just because it was new and I wanted to be up to date on everything. And now I have other stuff going on, and I'm, you know, I don't even watch Raw and SmackDown every week, so I can't really afford to watch NXT every week. Plus, I'm watching a lot older stuff than I used to. You know, I'm watching all the historic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that might be part of it. You know, maybe with Nakamura being such a special attraction, I mean, we'd see him once every 3 weeks when he was champ, so that might have been part of it. But, you know, NXT's roster is so big right now that how can you get your main champ on there every single week without worrying about, you know, putting off somebody else?
Yeah.
But I think part of it is probably just the perception that the roster is a lot weaker than it was 2 years ago. And then, you know, yeah, maybe NXT's TV has been a little bit weaker. And that's, I think, you can just point to the fact that they lost out on some really great talent like Finn Balor and Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe and Sami Zayn. But
yeah, but I don't know if like necessarily the roster is weaker. It's not as top heavy as it probably was.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot deeper, and it's set up for the long term instead of that short term, because a lot of it last year was like, let's get these guys ready for the main event. We saw Owens leave, we saw Zayn leave, we, you know, Finn Balor left, you know, Samoa Joe ended up leaving as well. So it was very much, let's get these guys ready and hopefully they can float, because we've seen the case where some of the characters don't float on the main roster. We're talking Tyler Breeze, we're talking Vault Villains, fuck Simon Gotcha, dude got fired, you know, he's a pile of crap. But it was one of those things where, you know, certain things really that translated very well in NXT did not translate very well over to the main roster, and I think a lot of that too is probably just they weren't ready.
Right. And you know, we can talk about NXT all day. Uh-huh. I think we want to move on, though, because we have a lot of WWE talk. But
we need,
from NXT TakeOver, what's one thing that after that show, what's one thing that you kind of, you know, are looking forward to, or one thing that
I
really
tweeted
impressed
it.
You?
I tweeted it right away. With that entrance, Aleister Black is going to be the man in NXT. This guy is like, he's set up for success at this point in time. Had a very good match there with CN Almas. It was a different match. It almost felt like a Ring of Honor match. And that's probably why Nigel McGuinness ended up saying, oh, he's going to do great things here in Ring of Honor. Because it came off like a classic Ring of Honor match with a lot of striking, a lot of good wrestling. That match was very, very well done. The triple threat tag match, Nick, like that thing is floating with like 5 stars around a lot of places.
Oh my gosh.
That's how good that match was. And it was really nice to see the hatchet buried between the Revival and DIY to try to beat the Authors in Pain. And it just ended up being a little bit more of that ego from the Revival that kind of stopped him from doing that. You can kind of see the rest of the psychology of the match working out. And a match that kind of grew on me as the night went on was actually Nakamura and Bobby Roode. I don't know what it was. I think it's a lot of, like, maybe you hear from other places and you kind of already made up your mind about what Roode could bring to the table, that you kind of taper your expectations outside of his ring entrance. But when he got in that ring, he had his working shoes on. Nakamura had his working shoes on. And, you know, after everything that happened this week with Raw and SmackDown, you kind of figure out why Nakamura had his working shoes on. It ended up being a swan song there in NXT, and it ended up probably being one of the more polished main events, like a classic main event.
Right.
And the work style was very methodical, but it served a purpose, and that was amazing to see those two guys put that match together.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, my one takeover from NXT that I could think of after you fantastically kind of summarized those three matches.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Definitely just where do they go from here? Because we'll talk about it in a little bit, but just with all the call-ups that they had, you know, it's the same thing that happened last year after WrestleMania and kind of halfway through the year is like, you know, what are they going to do? Because now they're missing out on some tag teams. Now they're missing out on some top stars. Where does Bobby Roode go from here after, mm-hmm. you know, keeping the belt? What does Asuka do? Because it seems to me like she just beat her biggest, you know, her biggest possible opponent. Now, the Asuka thing is actually pretty interesting with the heel turn, but
yep.
You have to wonder if that feud continues. You know, with NXT, the great thing about TakeOver and what WWE's going to be doing soon is that roster shakeup. So now you're going to have a bunch of new talent that you need to push in order to continue the success that you just built off of going up before WrestleMania. So I think that's my biggest takeaway from TakeOver is, as it is most takeovers, is where do they go from here? You know, where do they, what do they do with Chris Hero after he didn't show up on the show? Is Aleister Black going to be that
actually,
top guy?
He did show up on
did
the
show.
Did
he show up on the show?
He did, yeah. They ran an angle earlier in the day, right? No Way Jose had a, like,
oh, yeah.
NXT right. thing. He ended up getting jumped, blah, blah, blah. Cassius Ohno came out. He ended up doing his stuff in that, you know, 8-person tag.
I didn't watch every match. I kind of simmed through the matches
man.
I wanted to see.
It was actually a really good opener. It was fired up the crowd. Everything was bam, 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 bam. Ruby Riott got a lot of shine in that match, too. Like, they got some good stuff going.
But it's definitely something to look forward to, I think, with TakeOver and where they go next. It's always a fun thing about NXT is that they're all about development, so sometimes mm-hmm. you're going to see guys getting pushed in roles that you probably wouldn't see in WWE, and that's the exciting part of what NXT does. But speaking of WWE, WrestleMania on Sunday, we can't talk about wrestling without talking about WrestleMania
it's
post.
It's very hard to do.
You know, we kind of had an agreement of how we were going to try to break down a show with, whatever, 13 matches.
7 hours.
So what we're going to do is, I think we're just going to do our you know, our biggest letdown and our biggest, you know, happy thing. I don't know.
Should we go with the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows?
The highest of the highs and lowest of the lows.
Do you want to go like the highest of highs first and then the lowest of the lows?
Let's do lowest of the lows first. What do you got, Jesse?
Oh, man. You know what? I think one of the lowest of the lows had to be the disappointing finale to the Bray Wyatt-Randy Orton match. Now, this match, like, you know, they had a really nice, good build, a nice, long build, and it's something that a lot of fans really want.
Talking about going into WrestleMania was like that was one of the main yeah. feuds that they were looking forward to seeing how they what they did.
For whatever apparent reason, the beginning of the match started fast and it was good and it was different and you felt it. But then there was this, just this weird moment where Bray Wyatt ended up doing his taunt and all of a sudden they project worms onto yeah. the ring, and then, you know, you're like, well, that's kind of different. I think we all kind of looked at each other and like, that's different. And then they did it again.
Yep.
And then they did it again, and then you're like, okay, we got this theme going.
It has to play into the finish, or something's going to happen.
But it didn't play into the finish.
I know.
Because Bray Wyatt got that. Up, hit the RKO, and then it was like, oh, wow, Randy Orton just won another WWE championship. Nothing against that. Nothing against that.
No. We're not going to shit on that.
But what we're probably going to shit on is the whatever Bray Wyatt was doing, I don't think it had the effect that you wanted.
Oh, man. It was just so disappointing because, you know, sitting there, it was just like, I mean, like you mentioned with the projector and stuff, it was kind of like, oh, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But I'll bite. I'll play along. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens. Let's see why he's doing this. And we kind of talked about it. You had the perfect opportunity, you know.
Yep.
How do you not utilize that? How do you not? Basically, what the point of that was every time he did that, Randy Orton was like, oh, I'm freaking out. What's happening, man? Yeah. Like, I'm scared. Why don't you just turn that backwards on Bray Wyatt at yeah. the very end and have him go, I didn't plan this. Then you hit that arc. You can do the exact same finish that you did. Just add another one of those projector screen mm-hmm. things, whether it's, as you kind of you mentioned on Sunday night, maybe doing an image of Sister Abigail in some sort. Yeah. Or how I was thinking, you know, maybe do an image of a Viper if you want to be that cheesy about it. You know, that whatever.
Well, I mean, they already did the Viper gimmick as he was coming down
the
ring.
Snake, yeah.
That was insane.
That was...
But...
insane, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
we'll stick with that, yeah.
But creative, insane. It's one of those things where it needs to come back and bite him in the ass, and it didn't come back and bite him in the ass because he was very much in control, and then all of a sudden, an RKO out of nowhere.
It's almost like you were reading a book. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? It's like you were reading a book, and then it looks like you have 20 pages, but then when you reach for that last, that page, it's like the whole 20 pages just come with it. Like it's one just fat page, and it just ends like that, and you're like, okay.
Or
I was so invested in this. I honestly watching that, I was like, I'm kind of invested. Like, what the fuck is going to happen? And all of a sudden, it's just like, nope. It's like, oh, what the hell?
So this would be a good analogy. I don't know if you ever found these. All right, so back in the day, right, you found porn magazines in the forest.
Oh, my God.
All right? It's like if you got a porn magazine
oh my
and
God.
Half the pages were stuck together.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
And you're like, oh,
you
that's terrible.
But that's kind of what
no
it was
Jill
like.
Kelly
it was
for
just,
me.
It was just, yeah, it was very, that's one of the reasons why it was very disappointing. I mean, it's just, you had so much going into it. You were excited for it. You were excited to see Bray on the big stage, you know. And I think, honestly, partially Bray losing the belt did play into the disappointment factor a little bit for me, just because, you know, I was like, okay, well, AJ just lost it at the Rumble, and then Cena lost it at the Chamber, and now all of a sudden they're playing hot potato with the WWE Championship. Is Orton really going to hold it for that long? Who knows? It makes you excited to see what they're going to do going forward.
That's three title changes in the last three events on the SmackDown brand.
Yeah, and that's why it just didn't seem... It just, like I mentioned, you know, out of nowhere, RKO, fine, whatever. But, I mean, make it just make sense in that story. You built that storyline, whatever. What, didn't it start, like, right after WrestleMania or after SummerSlam last year?
After Orton basically got his shit kicked in from Brock Lesnar.
Long-ass storyline, you know, going into WrestleMania, it was one of the most exciting things to look forward to. They made that match super fucking weird to the point where I was like, what's happening? But I bought into it, and then they totally let me down. And we talked about this before. I said it on Facebook to our little fun wrestling group. You know, normally I'll defend WWE back and forth. You know, I might shit on Reigns sometimes, but I get their booking strategy. This one, I don't get. I don't understand it, and I can't defend it even if I try. But that's definitely, you know, for you, one of the disappointments for me, trying to lead into my disappointment. I think it just has to be, you know, the position that WWE Women's Championship match was in. I know that the idea of doing buffer matches and...
The one from the SmackDown brand.
Yeah. I know the idea of doing buffer matches, and I get that you need to do something between Taker and Reigns and Goldberg and Lesnar, but I just felt real bad for those ladies. They got put on really late in the show, and, you know... I don't think anybody cared. And, you know, it partially, people were hoping that they'd get on the main card. I kind of wish they would have stayed on the pre-show because they probably would have gotten a lot more love than they got. It was, you know, a big moment for Naomi. All those girls came to play, and I feel like it didn't get the respect it deserved because it was so late in the show and because it was in between two killer matches. I mean, it got to the point where when we were sitting there, I was like, they had to have cut this match because there's no way they're going to make it
just
follow.
Just kept on getting later and later.
And there's no way they're going to make it follow Goldberg and freaking, you know, Lesnar with the great match they had, which we'll talk about in a sec. Yep. And make it right before Taker and Reigns because everybody wanted to see what Taker was going to do since he hadn't wrestled since last year. So, you know, while I'm not super pissed about it and I really liked WrestleMania a lot. Like, I really liked it a lot. And just because I couldn't pick, I don't want to pick the same thing as you, that's probably my biggest disappointment.
Yeah, it was very hard because watching it live, we all had that same look of disappointment after that match. And it brings up a valid point, but like, now we got to get the highest of the highs. And there's so many really good highs.
But if you have to pick one, if we pick the same, I'll you want me to go first?
How about you go first?
I have to definitely say that Goldberg and Lesnar match, like for sure, man. Like, just exceeded my expectations, you know. And I'm that kind of guy where if there's a bunch of people shitting on something, like I want it to succeed so bad because I love when things prove people wrong. And I think that's exactly what that did. You know, everybody was like, I don't want to see this. It's for the belt. Screw that. This is dumb. Goldberg sucks. Lesnar sucks. It's going to be another squash match. Blah, blah, blah. There's no point in this. There's no reasoning behind this. And then those two dudes went out there and they proved exactly why. I honestly think that should have been the main event if Undertaker wouldn't have retired, but I think they proved why that could have been the main event. You know what I mean? Like, it did exactly what it needed to do. It was only 4 minutes long, but it was, dude, we were sitting there on the couch. We were like, oh, like, we were watching that match, and as guys that love the 20 to 30 minute, you know, Broadways, you know, we loved Kenny Omega and Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. We thought that shit was great. Yeah. But this had us even on our seats going, man, this is great. You know, Goldberg going through the barricade, Lesnar leapfrogging that spear. Yeah. I mean, I heard some other podcasts talking about this before, but like Lesnar hitting those multiple German suplexes and then getting cocky in the corner, and then also out of nowhere, the camera angle perfect, just getting speared, like, you know, just getting killed by a spear. Like, we didn't see it coming. I mean, it was great. Lesnar kicking out of the jackhammer. I mean, it was great. It did exactly what it needed to do. It exceeded my expectations, and, you know, that's definitely a match that, you know, it was probably definitely one of my favorite matches of the entire night, favorite moment of the entire night, and I'm really excited where they go.
Definitely,
that
match, in a nutshell, nuclear fucking warfare. Yeah. These guys were throwing bombs, and it was not going to go 10 minutes. Yep. It was not going to go 7 minutes. It went 5 minutes. I know a lot of people actually made fun of it for actually being shorter than some of the entrances, but you know what, guys? That's basically
those entrances are too long. That ramp was ridiculous.
80 fucking yards.
I laughed when John Cena was running down the ramp. I was like, this dude's literally like running a marathon right
now.
It's
like,
hilarious.
It got gifted into oblivion where he's just running back and forth.
Did it really?
Probably. For me, one of the biggest highlights, I'm just going to flat out say it. I thought the undercard performed beyond belief in this one. You look at the ladder match, the surprise of the Hardys coming back. That place blew. Like, that pop, that ovation was amazing.
Yep.
Those guys went out there and killed it in 11 minutes. They did so much shit in 11 minutes.
I know, isn't that crazy to think about?
It didn't feel like 11 minutes.
It felt like fucking a half an hour, man.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy.
That match was awesome. Neville, Austin Aries had a very good match in the pre-show. Really kind of set the pace of how that night was going to go.
Right.
You know, even Mojo Rawley winning the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. It was definitely a pleasant surprise. You had the Raw Women's title match. That was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. We saw a lot of really great things on the undercard, and it really shows that the youth movement here in WWE is working very, very well, because there's a lot of people out there who are very hungry for those spots that are being given up by some of the guys we're going to be talking about later tonight.
Well, it even shows you that, like, just how deep, like, WWE's roster right now. Like, I know that people like to look back at the Attitude Era and say that was quite possibly the most deep it's ever been, but I kind of want to. I think right now at this very moment, I don't know if it's been this deep ever. I mean, look at this WrestleMania. They had 13 matches, and you couldn't argue why any of those matches wouldn't be on WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Let alone the fact that they had to leave guys out. Like, you know, Braun Strowman didn't have a match. He was just thrown in the Battle Royale. Sami Zayn didn't have a match.
Yep.
Samoa Joe didn't have a match. There's a couple other guys that are missing. You know, they had to throw a bunch of great competitors in that quadruple tag team ladder match because, you know, as a way to get guys on cards. The SmackDown Women's match, that had to be a six women match. The Raw Women's match had to be a Fatal 4. I'm just, you know, what I'm trying to allude to is they had 13 matches and they still somehow left people off the card because that roster is so freaking deep right now. You know what I mean?
So, and you even look at like Shane and AJ. We haven't even talked about that match yet. That blew our expectations out of the water.
Yeah.
Ended up being, like, a lot of people called it their match of the night.
Right.
That's how good that match was. And, Kevin Owens and Jericho, we didn't even touch on that one. The false finish with the finger on the rope. That is one of the greatest WrestleMania moments of all time. And those guys put on, like, a hell of a match.
Mm-hmm.
And it really proved the point that, you know, some of the greats can still go. But we got to talk about one of the things coming out of WrestleMania. Of course, Roman Reigns puts The Undertaker basically to rest at the end of the show. I don't know, Nick. It almost felt like by the time the show was over, 7 hours after it started, that the crowd might have been burnt out at this moment. And maybe the atmosphere that we had for probably, it's going to be a hallmark moment in WWE history, it might have got lost a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I know we talked about that we were going to talk about this to end the show, but I think we have to talk about it right now. Screw it. We're going to break
what our template was.
Yeah, sure. We're breaking kayfabe.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It was so weird to see. You know, it seemed like it wasn't necessarily getting the reaction that you expected.
Mm-hmm.
But what a, you know, Stone Cold. If you guys listen to Stone Cold's podcast, you need to listen to his WrestleMania review, especially with Undertaker. He did a great job in basically, you know, saying what happened to, I think, every wrestling fan, and that after that whole thing with Taker happened, after he took the gloves off, he took the coat off, he took the hat off and started leaving the ring, you forgot that dude just had a match. Like, all you could think about was like, oh my gosh,
this is done.
He's done.
Yeah.
Like, you forgot about the match,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that says a lot about what WWE did and how they scripted everything and how they made sure that Taker went out and, you know, just like when he was going down the ramp and everything, it was just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, him and Reigns had a, in my opinion, you know, I think, you know, decent match. There was definitely some botches there. I mean, there was a lot of it, I think, that showed that Taker's age definitely showed in the match a little bit, I think. But I mean, the ending of it and seeing him walk out was just, honestly, just surreal. It was so weird.
I saw an article that actually compared the Undertaker-Reigns match to the last Muhammad Ali fight. Basically, it's an older fighter taking on a younger fighter. It's a last gasp at, like, you know, immortality, and the young fighter just over-dominating the old fighter. And, like, Taker's a big boxing fan, like, loves it, loves combat sports to death. That was probably what he had in mind for this matchup. He wanted someone who was young, who could really, really, really go, and Taker wanted to see if he can have that last shot. Very much like the last Gunslinger thing.
Yeah.
And it really showed as the match progressed, like, if it was intentional or unintentional, that Reigns was just that many steps ahead of The Undertaker at this point in time in his career. And I don't know if the match expectations at that point in time kind of changed. Because what you got to start thinking that is, like, outside of wrestling psychology, and you're like, oh, the match is kind of sloppy, there's a couple botches or whatever. Maybe intentionally, like, what happened, like, psychology-wise, you got uncomfortable watching this. Because you're getting uncomfortable watching this, like, oh, man, Taker just can't go anymore. He just can't do it. and maybe, like, that's the hook. That was the hook of the match, was, like, this guy just can't go. He is breaking down in front of us. Like, all the pomp, all the circumstances, that stuff, like, even against Lesnar, you know, like, that has a certain effect. But, like, when he got involved with Lesnar, and Lesnar was on that roll at a point in time, like, oh, you're just like, oh, I don't know if he can do it, you know. With Reigns, it made all the sense in the world, and the match came off. Maybe I want to rewatch it now, because I'm almost kind of, like, right. Shooting my...
Might have a different perspective.
I'm working myself into a shoot on this one, but I think it really worked out the way it did, especially with the retirement ceremony for him after the fact. And I don't know, we got to touch on this, Nick. Like, when we sat and we did the math, and you look at it, The Undertaker has been in the WWE almost 26 years. Almost
yep.
going on 27 years.
Right.
Debuted as basically as just a monster. A monster may have, like, a one-year run, but, mm-hmm. like, the guy who plays The Undertaker, Mark Calloway, this guy, one of the all-time greats. Man, like, he broke in 84. I was born in fucking 84. All right? So this guy's been in the business, like, four decades, 33 years, and he's put his body on the line from start to finish. You got to put this guy in, like, a top five all time.
That's what's crazy about it to me, man. Yeah. Like, you know, when I look at Undertaker, you know, every other year, I understood that he was one of the greatest of all time, but to me, mm-hmm. he was just like, oh, he's another really big, you know, big star, big wrestler.
Yeah.
It's like when Rock comes back, all big star, big wrestler. But then when you see him go out there, it's like, man, you know, I was born in 91.
Yeah.
And ever since I started wrestling, there's always been The Undertaker.
Yeah.
I can't say that about any other guy.
I mean,
most other guys that are around in the mid to late 90s they're gone. Or they
yeah.
weren't working every year, or, you know, they took a bunch of time off, like a Goldberg or whatever. You know, but Undertaker has just, he's always been there. Even
mm-hmm.
though the past couple years it's only been on a yearly basis, though, you always knew
it's
he was coming
specter,
back.
Though,
you
Undertaker.
Knew he was coming back, though. You're like, mm-hmm. oh, here, January, Taker's coming back probably at the Rumble. He's coming back some point after the Rumble. He'll be here. Now to know going forward, it's like he's not going to be, like, I just can't even fathom what that's going to be like once we hit February and we hit March and it's like, he's not coming back. I honestly can't even put into words what that's like right now, because it's so mind-boggling to me, because for the longest time, he's just been on such a high level. Even when
mm-hmm.
he did the whole American Badass thing, super weird gimmick, which
yeah.
was more, I think, of just who he was as a person. He wanted to kind of try that out. Terrible dresser. But he still was performing at an extremely high level
yep.
when he was doing that. And then, you know, just the past couple of years, it seemed like, especially with the Shawn Michaels and the Triple H series, it was like this dude was having WWE's match of the year every year
yep.
consistently. Like, you know, it's kind of sad. And I think you did a great job in kind of illustrating exactly what that was kind of like, because, you know, while the botches probably weren't intentional, I think the psychology behind what those and maybe just the psychology behind what Taker and Reigns put into
Taker
it.
Taker selling, as you put it.
Taker selling.
Yep.
But the psychology of how those botches almost
added to the
psychology behind it, because you are sitting there and you're like, man, because, you know, coming into it, I'll be honest, I was
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I think Taker's got one last one. I think he's going to
yeah.
pull off, you know, another great, you know, another one of those match of the years. But when you're watching it, you did get a little uncomfortable. You're like, you know, he can't keep up with Reigns. There's
yeah.
no way Reigns is showing this dude up right now. And whether that was the intentional psychology behind it or not, I think it sold the moment of him retiring even more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going forward, the nice thing about the difference between – here's the difference, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Between WWE and like, NFL or MLB or NBA, when you see a guy like Kobe retire or a guy like Peyton Manning,
yeah.
you know, you're like, oh, you want to retire on top. You don't want to be that guy like Peyton Manning who throws four picks in a matter
championship
of
game,
whatever. You know,
done.
Yeah, you don't want to be
yeah.
that guy. But – When you're in WWE, you almost need to have that kind of an out, because now we're not sitting here going, man, I wonder, you know, if Taker would come back next year. I wonder if he definitely has another match in him. Now we're sitting here like, you know what? It's probably time that he moves on, and we're happy that we got to see what we got to see, and we're not sitting here, you know, speculating about whether he's coming back or not, because honestly, it's probably good that he stays away. Because, you know, every single year now, we hear about Shawn Michaels and possibly turning on AJ Styles, and we're like, why? Why didn't Shawn come back? You know, it's because we saw Shawn go out at the end, at the top of his game.
Yeah.
With Taker now, it's kind of like, you know what? You don't need to come back. We're glad. We're happy that what we have with you, and I think, you know, we're good without ever having to see a Taker match again.
I think, like, the best moments in wrestling for guys to walk away is always on an L, because that's the definitive right there.
Right.
Like, you win or you lose. That's, like, the beautiful thing about pro wrestling. Even though, like, with sports, we always have this, like, fictional thing when it comes to, like, non-scripted sports where you want to go out on top, like you alluded to. It doesn't matter if it's, like, winning the World Series, winning the Super Bowl,
right,
NBA Finals, something like that. You want to do, like, that last hurrah, that last feat, you know, I'm going to get it.
Right.
You know, like Rocky bullshit.
Yep.
But with wrestling, though, the great morality play is your body breaks down and you can't go anymore.
Right.
And you walk away. Like, we saw it with Austin at 19. We saw it Flair at 24.
Yep.
You know, we saw it with Taker. We saw it with Michaels. You know, we're seeing guys walk away. That's why, like, the returns on, like, retirements from guys like Hogan always coming back. Like, it just got less and less special every
right,
time.
Exactly.
Foley had the perfect end to his career, like, a no way out in 2000. But he just kept on coming back, and it got less and less impactful after a while. Terry Funk, one of the greatest ones of all time, his retirement in Japan in the 80s, that beautiful, forever, you know, you might as well bring it up. Like, that really kind of sticks in your craw, but, like, every return afterwards, even though he was able to reinvent himself and he was still able to go, it became less and less special.
Right.
To the point now when you see him on a show, you're like, this might be Terry Funk's last go because he's 74, you know? But it's one of those things now where it's like a lot of these guys got that last hurrah and they got to walk out the way they wanted to, and it was great. So that really kind of brings us into the fact now, we gotta go to Raw.
We gotta talk. I think we've been talking now for like 40 minutes about this.
So we gotta transition into Raw, and probably a lot of people are calling the best opening to Raw forever.
Great.
10 minutes of the fans basically giving Roman Reigns the riot act.
Yep.
And him only saying 5 words.
Yep.
It's my yard now.
Yep. It's my yard now. That's 4 words.
It's four. Yeah. It is.
Oh,
my yard
you're gonna
now.
Add the is in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah, what a great opening that was. I will, you know, I want to temper people's expectations here just a little bit because, you know, if you listen to, I listen to podcasts all the time when I'm doing stuff. So, but Wade Keller did a great job in pointing out that right after Roman Reigns said that and left the ring, Corey Graves goes, this is a really weird crowd because they cheer people they normally boo and they boo people they normally cheer. Like, it was a point made to say that right after Reigns got done talking.
I don't think that was the right point to make.
I don't think so either, but who knows what. I mean, this is why you can't just automatically expect, okay, Reigns is full-blown heel, we got what we wanted, or you can't say, oh, Reigns is full-blown badass. It might have just been playing into whatever the crowd was doing.
Man.
But this is the great part about Raw,
yeah,
because now we get to now each Monday night be like, what's happening? What's going on here right now? Like, where are we going here, storyline-wise?
That's such a cop-out answer, because then you're putting the heat on the crowd instead of him.
Yeah.
You should have just been like, after he says that, be like, that's the definitive statement right there. Roman Reigns
that's
is
exactly
the new dog.
What you think, but you don't know, because here's the
because
problem.
Because he's just saying, like, the yard is his now. That's the definitive statement.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When you say something like that, I mean, and everybody's saying it, but, I think WWE with their whole, I mean, you look at the Lesnar and Goldberg thing, I'm starting to think that, I mean, yeah, you have some obvious heels and guys like Kevin Owens. You have some obvious faces and guys like Jericho who comes out and goes, this is my crowd, baby, and everybody cheers for him and stuff. But I think when you have guys like Roman Reigns and when you have guys like John Cena and you have guys like Brock Lesnar and Goldberg, these mega superstars that are larger than life, I don't even think there's a term of face or heel to describe these guys anymore, because as most people pointed out, Roman Reigns has been cutting promos similar to that for like a year now. It hasn't been as malicious, and he didn't sit there for 10 minutes and let people wear themselves out, but he's been doing the exact same thing for the longest time, and he's been getting booed for it. So, I mean, when you talk about heels and faces and things like that moving forward, I just don't want people to – I'm trying to say this because I don't want people to expect next Monday that Roman Reigns is going to come out and tell whatever crowd he's in front of that they're home team sucks. I think that this might be a different Reigns that we're getting here, but I think it's just more of that badass. Like, I'm a badass, this is what I think, and this is what I want to get
I
over.
I think, though, like, the point, though, that you brought up with that line, though, like, that's what I kind of think we need to kind of stress there. Because, like, I know where you're coming from, Nick. I really do. But the line was, you know, like, you know, oh, you know, this crowd here at the Raw after WrestleMania.
Cheer they people, they boo, and they boo people, they cheer.
But here's the thing, though. Like, when you tell the viewer at home that gives them cachet to go do that at their next show and do that at that next
show. Well, even like that, it basically, it's like you're basically opening the fourth wall. You're breaking down the fourth wall
there.
You
just basically just... You grenade that shit.
Yeah, it's like, normally, you know, the people that WWE scripts to be cheered aren't getting cheered, so let's make a point of mentioning that on air.
Why don't you just mention, like, what happened with WrestleMania when it tapered someone's expectations with a guy the night after?
I don't know.
Simple as that, you know? Fuck WWE.
Yeah, see, they make poor decisions like that sometimes. Yeah. I'm not sure. They did the exact same thing on SmackDown again where they said that in the opening of the show. So who knows if it correlates to Reigns. I wanted to make sure I said that because I think what I've been seeing on social media is people are like, oh, that Reigns promo was awesome, which it was fun.
It was
great.
A really good promo.
But people are like, oh, I can't. I'm so excited. He's finally a heel. It's like, now slow your roll here, buddy, because I don't think he's not going to be the dude that comes out and blindsides people, pulls tights, you know, puts his feet on the ropes. Let's just hold
joins
off a
the
sec.
Authority, all that
you know,
fun
because
stuff.
I have a feeling that over the next couple of weeks, we might start seeing some more angry social media posts about how much people hate Reigns because they got swerved into thinking that he was a heel when he's actually not. I think, like I mentioned, and I think you can kind of agree with this, when you look at guys like Lesnar and Reigns and stuff like that, they're not catering to a crowd. They're just going out there and doing what it is that they do. Mm-hmm. Reigns isn't doing blatant cheating or anything like a heel would, but he's not necessarily going out there and being like, come on, LaCrosse. You know what I mean? He's kind of given up on that gimmick ever since it didn't work for him against Triple H.
Yep.
So, but, you know, I just wanted to make sure people temper their expectations because, like I said, I've seen a lot of people that have been boasting about Reigns being a heel, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, slow your roll on that one.
Yeah, definitely.
But the big things, of course, we got to talk about with Raw is always the Raw after. It's very much the debuts and the returns. You know, we got to see the return of the Hardy Boys during WrestleMania that came out right away. Next segment, had a great match there with Gallows.
Now, do you think the Matt Hardy hype train will die down if this broken gimmick isn't implemented in some way? I'm really worried about that.
Worried. They were able to work around the broken thing because I think it was on Raw Talk afterwards. He basically laid it out and said, you know, we were broken, but coming back to the WWE fixed us.
Right.
So I think they can taper in some of the stuff. He can do some of his catchphrases, like, delightful. And
right.
Like, do the delete, delete, delete. But he doesn't have to go full-on broken Matt Hardy.
But do you think that's going to hurt him at all moving forward? Because I think people just loved how just, you know, because now it's like he's kind of, he has a little bit of that broken brilliance, but at the same time, he's kind of just regular Matt Hardy. And I think partially before, people bought into that gimmick because it was like, it is him. Like, they had all these just crazy-ass YouTube videos. The Vanguard, Senior Benjamin, Ben Himeen, his ridiculous accent, all these backstories he made up. He's not going to have that anymore. He's going to have the catchphrases, but it's like he's almost a shell of that broken Matt Hardy.
I think he can still do it, but one of the things that you have to acknowledge that he has already done that. Because if, like, think about this, right? So you did all that stuff. You made that bet on yourself, like, outside of WWE. Do you necessarily have to go back to WWE and do exactly the same thing you were doing to get back on the radar?
I don't think so.
No, I think once you get back on the radar, this is probably going to be their last run. Milk this thing for all the money that it's worth, and then retire.
Yep.
You know?
That's probably your best bet.
Yep. Retire, like, Cameron, North Carolina. In the compound.
Yeah, in the compound.
You know,
yeah, whatever. Make silly YouTube videos every now and then.
Exactly. And we also saw the return of Finn Balor in the main event as well. Got a hero's welcome. Because we're talking returns, and then we're going to talk debuts.
Oh, okay. So I get it.
So he got a huge hero's welcome, and it really kind of adds a new wrinkle to exactly where the Raw main event scene might go. And, of course, when you're talking debuts, you have to talk about the debut or the revival on Raw.
How cool was that? You know, I saw the New Day come out. And I honestly thought, I don't know if I'm just losing my edge here, but I thought they were going to squash some crappy tag team. Like, I thought the Shining Stars were going to come out or something when the New Day came out there, because they haven't wrestled in a while, and I thought this was going to be a mechanic to get them over. And all of a sudden, you know, the Revival's music hit, and I was like, oh, shit, the Revival's on Raw. Now, I will say this.
Yeah.
I'm going to go crap WWE guy here really quick before I defend them. I don't know why the Revival needs to be on Raw, because I think if anything that WrestleMania proved is that they have a great tag team division already. So why is the Revival debuting on Raw unless there's going to be a – that we'll talk about in a second – unless the the roster shakeup is huge for tag teams.
Yep.
Because right now, man, I think SmackDown's tag division is just barely – Barely staying afloat. Yeah, it's barely staying afloat. I think the Revival would have been fantastic over there. Like, you know, just kind of brought in this new look. It would have had a lot of eyes on that because we know the Revival is putting on freaking, like, near five-star tag matches every takeover that they do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's no reason to have the Revival on Raw at this point because we got the Hardys. We got Cesaro and Sheamus are turning out to be a fantastic tag team.
They're finally really buying it in, too.
Yeah. Enzo and Cass, you know, while they're maybe people are saying their shtick's getting old, they're there. The New Day is still there.
Getting old, but I will never get sick and tired of Cass throwing around Enzo.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's great. But then you also have the New Day, who right now still has the record for the longest tag team title reign in history. So you have right there alone four great tag teams. You know, for a division where you only spotlight it a few times, you know, on a Raw, it just seemed like they missed the ball on sending those guys to SmackDown, but that's just me, I guess.
But speaking of SmackDown, SmackDown did get two huge debuts. One of them was a perfect 10. Ty Dillinger came out to a hero's welcome, and probably the biggest debut of the weekend, everyone was talking about it, Shinsuke Nakamura on SmackDown.
Yeah, and, you know, Nakamura long overdue, obviously, this guy's, you know, up there in age, so he needed to get there ASAP. Kind of excited to see what they're going to do with him, because I don't know what they're going to do with him. He kind of came out and interrupted Miz, and you're kind of almost hoping for that program, because Shinsuke doesn't speak great English, and you have the Miz who can carry that through a promo, and then you have Shinsuke who can be there for the match. So I think that would be a phenomenal – I think that's a great
feud.
Yeah,
you know what's crazy? In that same little group, I saw people shitting on his debut.
I know.
And I'm like, how the fuck can you shit on that?
What do you want to do? Come out and cut a 10-minute promo?
No,
Orlando. It's like, oh, that was a shit promo. Great way to ruin your debut. That was fantastic.
You know, it was the best debut he could have.
Shinsuke Nakamura is great for getting charisma without having a mic in his hand. His entrance is freaking awesome. You added the violin player. Mm-hmm. It was great.
He came off as a rock star, and that's
exactly
what he is.
Exactly. And I think that was what I would have liked to have seen is him kick Miz in the face if they're going to go that route or something.
Man, do it at the pay-per-view after Payback.
But I think that's this would be a great introductory feud with him, because not only – you know, do I think they'd have a good match and it'd be fun, and people would love seeing Miz get kicked around by Nakamura. But Miz is the perfect guy for people that don't know who Nakamura is to get him over.
Yep.
So Miz can be here, be this bitchy little heel, get Nakamura over as a face to establish him on that SmackDown roster, and then after the pay-per-view where they have their first match, Nakamura's then, he's skyrocketed. He's a star right on that brand.
I think, like, projection-wise, you have to almost kind of pencil in right now, even if before this shake-up that we're going to get to in a moment, you almost have to pencil in Nakamura possibly in that title scene for SmackDown at SummerSlam.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's got to be one of the big things. They got to be like, let's pencil this in right now.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of the shakeup, let's hit on that quick. I know we've been talking for a real long time, so I don't want to talk too much longer, but we have to talk about the shakeup.
Yep.
You got the shakeup coming up next week. Shane McMahon was going to apparently come out and describe what it was, and then he didn't on SmackDown, so I'm still confused at exactly what the shakeup is.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's a draft. I'm not sure if they're going to pull, I don't know, some random generator.
No, I
don't
think
know what it
one
is.
One of the things we could do maybe is you have your two ball like things, like in like a bingo. I know I described it very terrible when I said ball things, but maybe it's like you know, Raw GM, you know, Kurt Angle comes up to like the SmackDown ball machine. He's like, "All right, let's see who we're gonna steal from SmackDown now." Take a look at this, and then of course, you know, Daniel Bryan go over to the Raw one, do the same thing. Maybe something similar like that, or maybe it's just a random thing like the Powerball. Five like balls come out and be like, "Hey, these guys are moving to Raw. These guys are moving to SmackDown," like something like that.
So, okay, well, let's do this really quick then while we're on the topic. If I'm not sure how many guys are getting moved over, or gals or tag teams, but let's do this really quick.
Let's just do five.
You want to do five or you want to do three? I was going to do three.
Okay,
but,
well, all right.
Because I'm not sure if I can think of five roster members off the top of my head. So we're going to do three. We're going to do three. Going to do three. So
three.
From you, Jesse, I want three people from Raw and three people from SmackDown that could jump to the – we'll start with Raw.
Okay.
So let's talk about it. Three people that could move to SmackDown that you think would make sense, that need that new start, that could benefit from leaving and then starting anew.
All right, well, SmackDown makes sense right away. You put Sami Zayn on SmackDown.
Okay, like, I agree. That's for both of us. We'll both agree on Sami Zayn.
So we both got that one. for someone to move to Raw that needs to move to Raw, yeesh, you know, that's a tough one. I think you almost have to do something different with the women's division. It's like move someone from SmackDown to Raw. If I had to move anyone, I would move Mickie James to Raw.
You really think so?
Yeah.
Now, I've been hearing a lot of people say they would move Becky Lynch, but that worries me because I think Becky Lynch is a cornerstone on that SmackDown
roster. Even though
roster
she did
right
look
now.
Like a very terrible cave woman.
She looked like a very dreads. Terrible cave woman.
Like, that just not does not work for her.
It does not work for her.
Nope.
If I was going to move somebody from SmackDown over to Raw, gosh, man, I kind of hate to be that guy, but I would probably move, I'd probably move AJ Styles. I really
AJ
would.
AJ Styles,
there's
right.
so many opportunities for him to, have different matchups with guys on Raw. He's done a lot of stuff with guys on SmackDown. I know everybody wants to see Shinsuke and AJ. But go watch Wrestle Kingdom if you want to see Shinsuke and AJ. They had a phenomenal match there. I think AJ can do wonders with guys on Raw, so I think AJ would be – plus, he just got done beating up Shane McMahon.
Yep.
Although they had, like, the nice
handshake.
Little shake-the-hand thing,
yeah.
I still think it makes sense for him to go to Raw.
All right, cool. So who's going to move from Raw to SmackDown then?
I'm going to move Charlotte.
Charlotte?
From Raw to SmackDown. I think the SmackDown division could use another, you know, top-tier younger woman heel who could, you know, kind of – help offset Alexa Bliss being the only, you know, I guess, younger, talented in-ring performer that, you know, because Carmella has a long way to go still. I think we can both agree on that. Mickie James, while she's great, I don't know if she's past her prime, but she's older, and I don't know what Natalya is doing. So I think that Charlotte would be a great addition to SmackDown.
Well, we know what one thing she's not doing.
What's that?
Hooking the sharpshooter on properly.
Yeah, that was not good.
Oh.
But I think Charlotte would be a great addition to SmackDown. She could work with Naomi. She could work with Becky Lynch really well.
Yeah.
I think she could add a lot to the SmackDown Women's Division and kind of almost make it a cornerstone on that show. And I think we can move forward with what I want to see is a Bayley and Sasha Banks feud on Raw. Plus,
gotcha.
Nia Jax is entering that role a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Nia Jax actually had a lot of impact on that Raw and laid out Charlotte
afterwards. And once Evil Emma comes back, Raw will have yet another heel.
Evil
woman.
Emma was back on Raw already.
Was she really?
Yeah.
I missed her.
She had a great entrance. She did her heel shtick. She got up on the table and, like, threw off her shoulder pads, and Corey Graves is like, ah!
No
like,
way.
Yeah. It was great.
Now I gotta
You have to watch it.
Dang it. Okay. Yeah. So, okay, now who do you got? Who's somebody that you got coming over to SmackDown?
All right. The New Day.
Okay. Yeah, good. I like
would
that.
Move
yeah.
the whole New Day
That's a good
over.
One.
They've been on Raw basically a lot of the get-go. It seems like maybe moving them to the blue brand and actually add a little bit more entertainment, help that tag division over there. Because, like, that's one of the things with Kofi getting injured from what it looked like when they did the angle, it might make sense to have Woods and Big E there as a tag team for a bit and really kind of maybe move Big E into a singles role. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with Xavier Woods based on this whole, like, Paige thing. We don't know. Let's just not speculate at this point in time.
Oh, man.
But depending on what part of the doghouse he's going to be in, you know, it doesn't really matter. But I think moving to SmackDown gives him a fresh start.
Yeah,
I
definitely agree with that.
Now, if I had to move someone else from SmackDown over to Raw to kind of compensate for that, man, that one's tough. You know, you already picked AJ Styles. That's a big one right there. You're moving a big piece of that brand. Luke Harper, I think, is a guy we can move
good
over to
pick,
Raw.
Good pick, man.
I think the biggest thing with Luke Harper is right now he's always getting kind of sandwiched in with that whole Wyatt family shtick. And there's only so much upside you can have with that. And I know we're probably going to get a lot of heat with that because right now they haven't really progressed with Bray Wyatt to the point where, besides giving him dreads and a different jacket, like, he's still very much the same Bray Wyatt he was when he came in. And him losing at WrestleMania back to back to back to back has not helped him out any bit. I would move Luke Harper over to Raw. You can have some very fresh matchups there. Plus, Raw is really getting kind of heavy with those big monster guys right now in this division. He would fit in perfectly over there, and it would be a fresh start for him.
Yeah, I think Luke Harper to Raw is a phenomenal idea. I'll jump on board with that. Because when you look at like a guy like Luke Harper, like, I don't think unless he is as far away from Bray Wyatt as possible that he will ever get associated as being being himself. Yeah. And I think that I honestly do think that you have to break him and Bray up in some capacity. So either Bray or Luke, I think, to Raw would make sense. But if you're moving AJ over there already, I think it'd be hard to argue moving a top star like Bray.
Because you can't move another top guy, you know? Like, if you're going to do parallel trades, it's got to be top guy for top guy.
Yep.
Mid-card guy for mid-card guy.
Yep. I agree. But we always know that Raw sometimes ends up with the
very top-heavy.
The top-heavy. But I think, you know, if you were to look at the list that we kind of made up here, and I think if we, you know, because we're probably actually going to start having to sit here and think if we actually want to keep continuing.
I only got one on my top of my tongue.
Oh, you do? Like, yeah. Go ahead. Bring it
all
on
right,
here,
so
dude.
So one guy I would move over to Raw as well, Mojo Riley.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I think Mojo would be great in the mid-card area at SmackDown because I don't know where they're going to go moving
I think
forward.
With
but.
Him, like, just the hype, you can really... I think you can really use him as like a good annoying heel mm-hmm. who's always hyped yeah. and always talking about how Gronk's his best friend.
Yeah,
and I think that kind of fits in with like you can have like because you already have those faces on Raw who are just like yeah whatever Mojo whatever. But he's like oh man you gotta stay hype. I think Mojo would be an interesting door. He's like a dark horse you know so. I don't know. You got like a dark horse guy you want to move from Raw to SmackDown then?
A dark horse.
Yeah. One day could, you know, you're just like, man, I didn't really think about that. Maybe kind of interesting.
A dark horse, eh?
Yeah.
I don't. I got nothing.
All right, cool then.
But I like this list.
Yeah, this is a very impressive list. We're probably going to be talking about this shakeup next week on the show, along with a lot of probably indie stuff we're going to be talking about, because we got two big shows coming up next week that we have to discuss and we have to get on the air. It's just going to be interesting because like this time after WrestleMania is very much a fresh restart for WWE, and we get to see different things, especially down in NXT. We're going to see different things there. We're going to see different things at Raw and SmackDown. Plus, there's a lot of things coming up this summer, too. There's always the rumor for the UK show. That's one of the big rumors coming up. 205 Lives really kicking out all cylinders, plus the WWE Women's Tournament this
right.
summer. So there's a lot of stuff to look forward
you
to going forward.
You got New Japan's United States tour.
Yeah, we got to get to that one of these days because they sold that show out in 2 hours.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
2 hours.
Yeah. So
3,000 seaters both nights.
Yeah, so that's something definitely really exciting to listen to. I don't know if anybody listened to JR's podcast with Dave Meltzer, but he talked about that a little bit down there, too.
Yeah. Some intriguing stuff, too, that JR actually dropped about his contract in there, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because he's a two-year contract, but he's allowed to continue working with Access TV, meaning this dude might be calling WWE one weekend and New Japan the next. It's, like, crazy to think about. Like, has there ever been a time in WWE history that this has been – we've had this, you know – quite possibly one of the greatest commentators of all time, able to call two of the biggest wrestling promotions in the world. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think the closest thing you could almost do it would be like, it doesn't applicate, but having like Jim Nance do the Super Bowl and the Masters.
Right.
That's like the closest thing.
Yeah. And that's really cool that we're living in a time when that can happen, and you're so happy for JR because of that. Because man, I just cannot tell you how sad I still am for that guy.
That is definitely a tragedy. I don't know how that guy is still. Rolling.
Like. Yeah. If I was him, I feel like I would be balled up in a corner, like just in my house, just saying no to the world. But I mean, he's still, you know, credit out to JR. I know that he probably doesn't listen to our podcast,
no,
but
he,
still,
he
just incredible strength and
you
honestly,
listen to the one with Meltzer, right?
Yeah.
What he, I almost started breaking down, listening to him almost breaking down.
Yeah.
Like, once Meltzer was like, Jan was great, all that stuff. And then he started talking about this is my first, like, road trip back, and she wasn't home. And you can hear the emotion.
Yeah, it's really tough. But, you know, listening to his podcasts, trying to go out to the shows that he's at, if you're in those areas, are great ways to support him. And, you know, just being able to see him at WWE doing WrestleMania, like seeing him do what he loves doing, it's just so fantastic that partnership was built up again. But your heart goes out for the guy because, you know, he was literally being the biggest pro wrestling nut ever when I was a kid. He was literally, like, the voice of my childhood.
Yeah.
And he still is. Like, I still, you know, when I think of wrestling commentators, JR will always be that number one guy. I mean, as two guys that work in broadcasting, you know, I think play-by-play is a huge part of what it is we watch. I mean, we focus on it. We analyze it when we listen to it. It's a huge part of, you know...
It's probably why I got kind of like, you know, like, they should never use that line on commentary. You
know?
Like,
yeah, right. Yeah. And that's part of it. And then when you know a guy that basically has done, I don't know about you, but I mean, tons of inspiration as far as how to call matches, how to, you know, do ring psychology, things like that. And when you hear about something like that happening and just being like, I can't even imagine, you know, it's just like I just recently, you know, got engaged, just at my wedding date and stuff like that, and being like, you know, I couldn't even imagine that right now, let alone having that long term partnership and something freak like that happening. It's just, it's unfathomable. I just can't even, it's hard to talk about.
Yeah. It's, you gotta take every day at a time and like live life to the fullest, as they would say. But you know, we gotta get back to this podcast, but it's very much kind of
deep there,
but, we're gonna take another quick break. When we come back, you know, we're gonna wrap things up and we got a couple new things that we want to add to the wrinkle to the show that I think hopefully you guys enjoy. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Grapple Talk.
Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says...
Stop watching your neighbors get undressed. You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is...
Download the latest Grapple Talk podcast on iTunes. Just type Grapple Talk into the search bar. It's not rocket science.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
For the latest pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerweck.net. Gerwick.net. Pro wrestling since 1997.
Hey, Grapple Talk listeners, this is Chris from Spot Monkey Media. Are you a professional wrestler, a promoter, a business owner? Spot Monkey Media is graphic design for the wrestling professional. We offer design services for t-shirts, event posters, 8x10s, logos, and even ring gear. But if you're not in the wrestling business, we work outside the ropes. Go to spotmonkeymedia.com for more information. Spot Monkey Media, create your legacy.
Hello, wrestling fans. Colt Cabana coming to you live from the 1 Hour Tease Arena in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. The pro wrestling action has been great so far. As you can see, Joey really dominating the ring so far. There's a beautiful belly-to-back suplex. And uh-oh. Looks like Joey's shirt has been ripped.
What's up with that? You ripped my shirt.
Let's go check an instant replay, see exactly what happened. There you can see Joey's shirt ripped from the collar, and that's not good when you're trying to wear your pro wrestling t-shirt.
Man, you ripped my shirt. It's my only shirt. Joey.
Hey, looks like Ryan from 1 Hour Tees just threw Joey Ryan a brand new t-shirt.
Thanks, Pro Wrestling Tees.
ProWrestlingTees.com, over 3,000 wrestling t-shirts designed and sold by pro wrestlers. Wrestlers such as Steve Austin, CM Punk, Macho Man, Mick Foley, DDP, Andre the Giant, Jake the Snake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Scott Hall, Ted DiBiase, Colt Cabana, Joey Ryan, Cliff Compton, and the entire Bullet Club. All stores owned by pro wrestlers. Support pro wrestling today and visit ProWrestlingTees.com.
Let me tell you something about respect. Huh? You want to hear a little bit about respect?
I would love to hear about respect.
I respect!
Nick Ragnar, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden.
As a group, we do.
You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Well, Jesse, we basically talked for as long as we could probably talk. We could probably actually talk way longer than we talked about. But, you know, the show must go on, and so many monumental things happening this past weekend. But lots of monumental things happening on this day in wrestling history. As we record this, it is April 6th, so most likely...
You're probably going to hear it on the 7th or the 8th.
But on this day, wrestling, wrestling history, one of the big things that it's highlighted, thanks to our buddies over at CagesideSeats.com, great website. You should definitely head on over there if you ever want to kind of check out what's happening on this day in wrestling history. They also have some other fantastic articles on there as well. But Daniel Bryan winning the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, actually, just a few years ago.
WrestleMania 30, it'll always be remembered as the night that Daniel Bryan really kind of cemented his legacy, and it's also the night that Brock Lesnar ended the streak of The Undertaker.
Right.
It's a good thing that it's topical that we talked about Taker earlier today, and you can really kind of see the seeds sowing that. We can go even back 38 years ago today, Abdul the Butcher won the All Japan Pro Wrestling Champion Carnival. Now, the carnival is still going on these days. They got a big one going on. If you get a chance to follow All Japan Pro Wrestling, make sure you check that one out. Here's one that's actually kind of interesting for the local flair. 32 years ago, Ken Patera was actually arrested in Waukesha, Wisconsin.
Check that out.
Following an incident where he threw a rock through a window at McDonald's. Now, this is always one of the bigger stories because Ken Patera was a huge star at this point in time. He ended up losing a few years of his career and a few years of his life because he actually spent 2 years in jail as well for that one. Came back to the WWE as a white meat babyface, helped Hulk Hogan there, got a good rub. Basically got his life back together. You know, his adopted daughter, Heather Patera, is still wrestling all over the scene.
It's crazy
to
think about.
It's really cool. Good Midwest story there. The guy was able to redeem himself.
Definitely go. 20 years ago, though,
20
Jesse.
Years ago.
Here's the big one.
Yeah.
It's huge.
This one is huge.
20 years ago, WCW presented Spring Stampede. Now, why is this so monumental, Jesse?
Spring Stampede happens to be one of the benchmark pay-per-views for WCW at this point in time. The main event was Diamond Dallas Page take on the Macho Man Randy Savage in that Norton disqualification match.
But there's one thing that happened backstage that I think overshadowed a lot of and anything else that happened on that match. For a lot of you Botchamania fans, for a lot of you, people that love... looking up promos that gone bad, this is the moment where I think quite possibly the most recognizable, I wouldn't even say botched promo, but one of the most recognizable promo incidents of all time happened. And why don't you just, I guess, more or less take a listen.
All right.
I'm Gene Okun, you out here talking about a click. The only click you need to know about is the Harlem Heat and Sister Sherry. See, because what you're dealing with here is the brotherhood. It's nonstop from this point on in WCW. We take what we want. And after we take Lex Luger and the Giant, we want the gold, sucker. Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga.
I should point out for the record.
Instantly he goes, I made a mistake.
Yep. About the best part about this, though, is Sherry just making sure that Booker T still looks mean after that. One of the greatest botches of all time. If you think about it, 20 years ago, that, I mean, that almost feels fresh, like just yesterday. Even though, God, man, check out this card, man. There's some really interesting matches on here. Rey Mysterio Jr. taking on the Ultimo Dragon. Akira Hokuto beating Medusa. Prince Iaukea taking on Lord Stephen Regal. Public Enemy actually being Jeff Jarrett and Steve McMichael. I never would have guessed that one. Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit.
Fantastic match.
Yeah, you got Kevin Nash defeating Rick Steiner for the tag team titles. And, of course, Luger and the Giant taking on the Harlem Heat there for the number one contendership. It's just fantastic stuff right there, guys. Yeah, also, this one's actually kind of pretty relevant, too. 6 years ago today in the L.A. Times, there is a report that Vince McMahon was removing the word wrestling from his company name in a rebranding effort. Now, this is one of those things where a lot of people want to hype whether or not Vince actually still refers to his product as wrestling. He's been referring to his product as something more than wrestling for years. Go back to Beyond the Mat if you did not believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, pal, we're in the movie business.
Yep.
And, of course, 4 years ago, this is a big milestone here for Shimmer as they had their iPay-per-view debut with Shimmer 52. Actually,
it's 53, bud.
I looked like a 2 from where I was. Shimmer's still going strong, still really packing the houses there in Berwyn. Had a really good weekend down there, and of course in Orlando. You always see like the best of the best with the ladies wrestlers coming up at this point in time. That was a tongue twister on my part. I couldn't really get that one out, but you know, it's definitely 4 years ago, man. That's insane just how much wrestling has changed in the last 4 years.
I remember
years.
Talking about that a little bit. The iPay-per-view with Shimmer, but with you guys, but I guess I don't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, just so many things have happened, and I think, it's crazy, and this is one of the best parts about this segment is kind of looking back and seeing how things have evolved and things have changed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of how things are changing, there's a lot of really, really awesome shows that are also coming up, Jesse, talking about, I think, Evolve May 20th, Evolve 84 being booked in Chicago, kind of going through, I don't know, some controversy here, I think, a little bit.
A little bit of controversy. Evolve's had this May 20th date in Chicago. It's a Saturday. They had the evening show booked for a while. It happens to be the same weekend that WWE is going to be in town for a big pay-per-view as well. And it seems like WWE decided to run a takeover to go against Evolve. Now, Gabe Sapolsky's got a pretty good working relationship there with the WWE. He was able to move his show up in time. I think it's going to be at 4 p.m. Don't quote me on that one. It might be 3. But it's looking like you could hit both Evolve and TakeOver back-to-back that weekend in Chicago. That's going to be huge, especially if you really, really want to see the future of wrestling. That date, you want to make sure you put in your calendar.
It's kind of exciting because at first when you think about it, if they're booking against each other, you're missing out on some of those really hardcore fans. Because if you like Evolve, most likely you are, you like that indie stuff, but you like the up-and-comers, and it's something that, you love NXT. For them to be able to try to book these and, Evolve earlier in the day, I mean, for me, if I could afford it, I mean, an entire day of fantastic wrestling when you're talking about Evolve and TakeOver, it almost seems like a can't-miss opportunity if you're in the area.
Yeah, Evolve, I believe this is their Chicago debut. Don't quote me on that one as well. But when we went to saw NXT in Chicago, they had to do 2 shows. That's how hot that ticket was.
Right.
Now they're bringing in the TakeOver there. They're going to jam-pack that place. Tickets go on sale this Saturday. Make sure you're on that website to get your tickets now if you really, really want to get them.
It'll sell
out quick. Because they're going to sell out quick.
Chicago's always one of the
hottest
crowds.
Especially since, New Japan sold out their 2 Long Beach dates within 2 hours.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about. June 3rd also for the local kids. Wrestlepalooza is going to be out at the Twin Cities. Definitely don't want to miss that one.
First Ave.
Tickets, I believe, go on sale this Saturday. So Wrestlepalooza, another big show. Another big show that's kind of making a name here is almost like, it's
Once a year event, a celebration.
You know, they got pretty much anything and everything you could want in a wrestling show, and more or less an event, I think you'd call it at this point. Mondo Lucha, September the 8th. Tickets, I can't remember when those go on sale.
You know, I didn't see
a
ticket on sale date. They just basically laid out the date just earlier today as we were recording. We were very hyped for this. Mondo Lucha puts on probably one of the best shows you're going to see in the tri-state area. It's just as fun as WrestlePalooza. If you've never been to WrestlePalooza, it's in Milwaukee, and it's got its own flair, and that's really cool. And we get to see a good mix of national talent working with local
guys. Exactly, right. And the place, you know, AC Riley was at Mondo Lucha. I think he was at Mondo Lucha last year.
Yeah, he was.
And he said that, you know, the crowd was hot the entire time. It was one of the best shows that he's ever seen live, and, you know, I think that speaks volumes. And then we want to make sure before we wrap things up and we're talking about some upcoming dates, April 22nd, Water City WrestleCon happening out in Oshkosh. Again, just a very stacked card. Bret the frickin' Hitman Hart's going to be there, man. So if you haven't gotten tickets yet, you want to make sure you hit up their Facebook page. Just search HCW Wrestling. You'll find out how to get tickets that way.
Definitely. You want to make sure you're there at Water City WrestleCon. If you've never been to a WrestleCon, period, imagine if you
They got mean, vendors.
They got vendors. It's very much like a Comic-Con. Anything you ever wanted to purchase for wrestling or see for wrestling, you get it there. You can get your autograph. You can get your picture taken with Bret Hart, Vicky Guerrero, Kevin Thorne, like some really, really good talent. Plus, you're going to see WLC2, Sal Torito takes on Swaggle.
Oh, there you go.
That's going to be a good one.
And then before we close the show, another segment that we kind of wanted to add, maybe a fun little stat segment, Jesse, because I know you did some research on this, so I don't want to go without mentioning it. So you did some research on the superstars that closed out WrestleMania. What did you find?
Well, one of the big things about closing out WrestleMania is very much that's the prestige spot that a lot of guys want. Now, I was going through the list, and you almost think it's going to be a who's who, but it was a number of times a guy actually closed out WrestleMania that kind of blew my mind. You would think for a guy like The Undertaker, who's had this historic career that he's had, he's only closed out 4 WrestleManias.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
That's crazy.
Absolutely crazy. But like a guy like John Cena, who's actually getting up there, has closed out 5 of them. A guy like Stone Cold Steve Austin has only closed out 3.
Now, that is a very surprising statistic because people saw that it seemed like Austin was on top forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, when the stock that people put into closing out WrestleManias, you know, I guess necessarily don't hold that much weight when you're talking about Austin being one of the greatest of all time, but only closing out 3 of those manias.
So when we actually crunched the numbers and we looked at it, there was 2 guys who closed out the same amount of WrestleManias, and they're on top of the leaderboard. And this record's probably going to get broke at some point by one of these guys, and more than likely it's going to be the second one, because number one on the list is Hulk Hogan, closed out WrestleMania 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8. Technically, we're not going to put in 9 because he wasn't billed for the main event and then he ended up coming out and get the whole gimmick thing to Yokozuna. So we're not going to count that one. The other guy.
What was the close? Was the close to 4? Was that the tournament?
Yeah, the tournament was 4. So it was Savage and
DiBiase.
Okay. So hence why Savage closed out 4 and 5.
Right, there you go.
The other guy. Now, this one was I was kind of surprised by it because I wasn't really thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden you're like, huh. Was Triple H close out WrestleMania 2000?
Fatal 4-Way.
18.
Jericho.
20. 21. 22. 25. And 32.
Right. Yeah, he's closed out 6, and you almost have to think.
Actually, it's 7.
Is that 7?
It's 7, yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
7.
Yeah, 7 each.
Oh, it's 7 each. Well, regardless, they're tied. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yep, they're tied, and one of them is going to break that record.
But I think you can actually expect Triple H to break it, because if he actually ever gets to a point where it's like, I'm going to hang up the boots, he might have that send-off kind of like Taker did. I'm hanging up the boots of the game, but I'm old.
I like how you turn into Rocky Balboa. The question is, though, like, all right, for Triple H, does he need to have that moment?
Yes! He's one of the greatest of all time! Screw all you that don't say he is. He has great matches all the time. Dude, that ending with him and Seth Rollins and Stephanie was perfect, and I guarantee that he came up with that. I mean, this guy has done so much for this business. I mean, if you think about it, he's helped rebuild NXT. I mean, he basically carried the freaking title through the early 2000s. Like, you know, he was the only guy that had the belt. But, you know, he's so good at what he does. I would argue he's probably top 5 all-time on the mic. I mean, at this point, I mean, it's hard, I think, to argue that. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think there could be an argument, though.
I know. Oh, yeah. Okay, there's an argument. Yeah. But I think he's arguably in that top five. I mean, I think you could argue for him being in the top five is what I'm trying to say.
I think he could, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to say, you know, I think having a send-off like Taker had, you know, could be expected. Now, do I think it has to happen? I don't think it has to happen.
Yeah.
But I think it could be expected. Like, does he need the moment? Probably not. But yeah, I could definitely see that happening. Could you?
I could. The question is,
put over Reigns in like 5 years?
He already put over Reigns last year. He doesn't need to put him over again in five years.
Twice in a lifetime, bud.
Twice in a lifetime, no. But it's going to be interesting to see kind of like where this one goes. Because Reigns right now has closed out the last three WrestleManias. There's not a lot of guys who actually close out WrestleManias three times in a row.
Consecutively anymore. I mean, that's just not something that you'd expect.
Guys like Hogan have done it. The Rock has done it. Not many other guys have done it.
Yeah, and that's I think that, you know, Cena did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people also say that Cena is like this generation's Hulk Hogan.
But then
so,
again, Cena did it, Miz, Rock, Rock.
Right. So he almost had. I don't want to unfortunately say it this way, but he almost had an excuse to main event because you can't have Rock and Cena as an undercard match. But yeah, you have to wonder like how does Reigns not main event WrestleMania? Because if the rumors are true, like if he's fighting Lesnar for the belt next year. Who's the main event? It has to be Reigns and
Lesnar. That would have to be the main event.
Right.
That's the kind of the match they're building up to. And
that'd be a record, four straight. That'd be the first time that's ever happened.
No, Hogan. Hogan did 5, 6, 7, 8.
It's not good with counting. Bad at counting.
Hey, guys, but you can always count on us here at Grapple Talk. Nice. Make sure you give us a like on the Facebook. Nick, what is it?
Facebook.com/TheGrappleTalk. Otherwise, you can follow us on Twitter @TheGrappleTalk. If you're still listening, thank you so much for being a trooper and sticking with us. I know we talked about a lot of wrestling today, but you know, so much happened. And, you know, we don't record on Mondays or Tuesdays or Wednesdays. So we had TakeOver, WrestleMania, Monday Night Raw, SmackDown. We had all that stuff to talk about. We have all these shows coming up that we wanted to talk about. We had our road trip that we wanted to talk about. So, I mean, it's hard to fit all that into one show. I mean, if we did record on Monday, I mean, we would have left out all that other stuff, and it would have been a shorter show.
Exactly, and we even left out one of the big matches that's happening this weekend, and, of course, that's Shibata taking on Okada.
Right.
You know, we're going to be glued to that. We'll probably wake up super early or just, like, bootleg it the next day, one
probably
of the two.
Probably that's the easier way
but,
to do it.
But, you know, there's always something good going on for wrestling. Make sure you subscribe to us also on iTunes because, hey, you know, that way you can always get us no matter when these episodes are popping up.
So if you're not checking our Facebook page to find out the latest and greatest information in wrestling, we'll just keep reminding you through our podcast. So that's why you subscribe to us because then it's like, oh yeah, I need to go to the Facebook page and check that out because I don't know.
Of course, we'll be adding new bells and whistles to the show as the weeks progress. You know,
AC Riley's not holding us down anymore.
Yeah, we got some great ideas. One of them is hopefully works out really well because I think it could be really funny.
Yeah, we have a lot of really good ideas, but I will expand on those in the coming weeks. When we probably don't have as much to talk about. But for that,
we'll probably find something to talk about.
For now, we'll leave it there. For Jesse Von Raspberry, I'm Nick Ragner. Thanks for joining us on Grapple Talk this week. We'll catch you suckas next week right here on Grapple Talk.
We're coming for you.
Thank you for tuning in to Grapple Talk.
GrappleTalk.com/the Facebook. That didn't make sense.
They know where to find us on Facebook.
I just had a stroke.
With Nick Ragner, AC Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden.
I would say the traditional one.
something like that. I don't know.
What was that?
I don't know.
Beatboxing by AC Riley, not available in stores
gosh.
For good reason.
Man, we just got some stuff for the blooper reel, that's all I'm saying.
Our entire podcast is the blooper reel.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.